This program has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You're listening to The Farm Report. I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. Off air, I'm the executive director of Heritage Radio Network. And on air, on The Farm, on The Farm Report, I talk about all things related to food and food production. And of course, today is no different. We are continuing our conversation around the meat industry, looking specifically at slow meat. We're joined by two very special guests here in the studio, Sophie Grant and Sam Garwin from Fleischer's. Welcome to the studio, ladies.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So we have talked to the Fleischer's team before on the show, and so I'm excited to hear a little bit more insider perspective on your work and kind of how you guys think about slow meat at Fleischer's. But before we jump into the nuts and bolts of the organization, of course, I want to hear a little bit more about you guys. So, Sam, you are the chief operating officer, but you started as a butcher, still probably do some butchering. How did you get into cutting meat?
It really started as just a desire to learn more. It was honestly not supposed to be a career move. I'm very happy that how it's worked out. But I was interested in learning more about how meat got from the farm to the table, but specifically, in even the best places where meat is processed and used, what is going to waste, what are the issues they're facing? And so I was looking for an apprenticeship where I could learn that. So it was originally supposed to be just a 3-month experience where I learned how to butcher. And in the process, I really fell in love with it. I really realized that this was an area where I could both be very hands-on, literally, with food and make a difference on a bigger picture with this meat movement that was kind of taking shape.
Yeah. And, you know, for folks who aren't here with us in the studio, Sam is a woman, and I want to touch on that a little bit because I feel like there's not a lot of you in the meat cutting business. And did that come up for you at all?
It did at the beginning. Definitely, you know, it's hard to say how much was just because I was a new face and how much was because I was a woman, but there definitely was some trepidation amongst new customers about whether I could do the same things that the guys could do. I'm very proud to say that everybody, I've not faced those issues in the last 3 years since that initial kind of shock. But, it's a very physical job. I think there's a part of the reason that more women aren't involved is because, there is a lot of, you have to get dirty. You have to lift 100 pounds. That's how much a side of pork weighs. It's just, that's part of the job.
Right.
And might not even be about ability, might just be about desire to do that work. I find it very rewarding to be that physical in the job day to day. But there definitely are fewer of us, but there's
growing.
It's a growing number. Carrie Underly does amazing work. She's starting her own butcher school in Chicago. We have Sarah Bigelow at the Meat Hook. Lots of other women out there doing great work, so.
Well, so how does one make their way from a 3-month butchering internship to chief operating officer? Obviously, you were impressing the right folks, so.
Yeah. My background is actually not in food at all. I studied information science, and I worked in software for several years. Ended up being a product manager, which is very similar to being a chief operating officer, actually, because you really have your fingers on the pulse of lots of different areas of the business, from marketing to product development to engineering, actually, producing the thing. And that's what I like. I'm a generalist. So keeping track of all those moving parts is, whether it's meat or software is what I'm good at. So
it's a natural fit. Well, Sophie, how about you? Your current title is marketing director. How did you come to the Fleischer's family?
Well, I'm a Brooklyn native, born and raised, and I went to school in Ann Arbor, and when I returned to what seemed like a completely different borough, you know, I was just really excited by the food industry. I've been working in restaurants, catering, food businesses for quite a while now, and returning back to Park Slope and seeing the Fleischer's shop and seeing this new, exciting food scene was really inspiring. And, you know, we kind of started up at our Red Hook facility at the end of 2013, the start of 2014. So I was part of the team to kind of the team of two or three people to get the administration together and, you know, really get ready to grow in a great way. So having the ability to have my desk right next to the cutting floor, I mean, as Sam mentioned, we're a really education-focused company. So being able to hold a position as marketing director, but to have one of the butchers be like, we're going to have you break a pig this week, you know, that to me is really exciting. And that's the type of place where I want to work. So, you know, and having access to great meat and being able to practice what we preach is really wonderful.
And so one of the side benefits, you guys probably get to eat pretty well, right?
It's not too shabby. Yeah. No, we're pretty spoiled and we don't take that for granted. And, you know, it's part of us like finding those cuts that maybe are less common and lesser known by our customers, but then being able to create something with it and then share it with them is part of that full picture. So it really helps to be able to take home a grass-fed ribeye and compare that to something that's pasture-raised or something, you know, and being able to share that on our social media and get people excited through that is really special.
So, you know, you said the magic words there, grass-fed. Sophie, like, when folks are thinking about, you know, what makes a Fleischer's experience, you know, kind of paint the picture for us. What are we getting when we walk in there that's different from what we're getting at, you know, the Key Foods up the street or another butcher shop here in the city? What is the kind of Fleischer's aesthetic approach?
Yeah, so Fleischer's is all about the quality, which starts from where it's raised and how it's raised, how it's processed, all the way down to the butchers cutting it and getting it ready for the case. So the experience of walking into a butcher shop and is that full picture and talking with the butcher and getting to know them and having a relationship with the local butcher shop in this kind of old school way is what we've always held to be, you know, the perfect experience. And so being able to educate people on difference between grass-fed, pasture-raised is definitely a conversation that happens a lot. But people being able to just come in and leave with something either that they come in and get every single week or something that's totally different that they've never had before and to have the opportunity to try something new. So getting to go around the whole animal, I think, is what a lot of customers are excited about when they can come to Fleischer's and they can think of anything, any recipe from a pig's foot to you know, any more commonly known cut of beef. It's part of the opportunity to work with a local butcher.
Yeah, you get the full picture. Well, Sam, obviously, like, thinking about things from an operational standpoint, how do you guys do your sourcing? Like, how do you decide where to buy animals from? Are you bringing in primarily whole animals, animals in cuts? And how do you kind of make some of those decisions about the sourcing?
Yeah, the sourcing is absolutely crucial to what we do. And it's not just the sourcing, it's also bringing some transparency to our customers so they know exactly where it's coming from. So right now we buy exclusively from New York and Connecticut. Chickens come from Pennsylvania, but other than that, the larger animals are all coming from New York and Connecticut. And we have our own set of standards that we hold our farmers to. Whether an animal is grass-fed or pasture-raised, that is something that we make a distinction between. But regardless, the animal needs to spend its life outdoors. It needs to – everything is pasture-raised, whether it's grass-fed or, you know, we do buy beef that gets some grain throughout its life, not a large amount, a very small amount. But it brings it closer to the marbling that people expect at, you know, if they're transitioning from a Key Foods to Fleischer's. And The standards also include no antibiotics, no hormones. We partner with specific small slaughterhouses, and we ask that the farmers use those slaughterhouses, which process the animals one at a time, ensuring that everything is taken care of in the way it should. And we have to be able to visit. That's a very important part, and that's part of what we offer our employees also, is we do at a minimum an annual farm tour where every single employee in the company, we shut down the company, all the shops are closed, and we take everyone out to those farms, and they get to see where the animals are living and ask all those questions.
One of the things that comes up, I feel like, a lot, especially when you're talking about, you know, I'm using air quotes here, good meat, is this idea that, yeah, you know, you can do, you know, a cow or a pig that way, but you're not going to, like, feed the world with this type of meat. I know you guys have gone through some transition and are a growing company, and maybe you can talk a little bit about what's been kind of working and what are maybe some of the challenges as you've looked around to bring in more product.
Absolutely. Scaling, we have found to be really crucial to making our business work on a just financial nuts and bolts level. There are certain economies of scale you get when you grow bigger. And the challenge has been to work with the farmers to make sure that we are still supporting them as we grow, and that we're growing together. And those relationships are changing over time. So, for instance, with beef, we are starting to develop our own co-op, because what we found is that there is no single farmer that we know of that we're working with in the Northeast that can support all of our beef for all of our shops. And we now have three shops. We have Brooklyn in Park Slope, we have Kingston, New York, and then we have Westport, Connecticut. And we're expecting to open another store in Greenwich, Connecticut this summer. So with this co-op, we actually are putting more in on our end. We are investing in actually purchasing the animals up front, and then we're paying a group of farmers a stipend to raise the animals for us to our standards. And in that way, we're assisting the farmers by taking a lot of risk away from them. We're putting in that upfront cost so they don't have to. And we pay any vet fees that might come up over the course of the animal's life. And then we handle a lot of the transportation as well.
Wow. So it sounds like with that move, the things that you're going to need to know about are going to expand pretty dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It's been a steep learning curve. We've done a lot of research. And this is what our CEO, Ryan Fibiger, has been spending a lot of his time doing, is figuring out what are these standards. We've definitely looked to American Grass-Fed Association. We've looked to AWA for what their standards look like, so we can develop ours kind of based on that. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, the farmers are the experts. The people we're working with are not novices. They've been doing this for a while, and we definitely look to them to bring their knowledge to the table.
Do you think there are particular challenges to being, you know, operational and looking to source primarily in the Northeast? I mean, does that set you apart from the issues that a butcher shop of your scale or your ambition would be facing in, you know, Southern California or the Pacific Northwest?
There are definitely challenges to raising animals in the Northeast. I think one of the big ones is that, you know, Carrie Balcom last week on your show was talking about seasonality in animals and in meat. And you can really see that a lot in the Northeast because of the drastic swings in weather throughout the year. So we do carry 100% grass-fed beef, and the difference between that, the fat content in that in the winter is drastically different from the fat content in that during the summer. So that is something that we kind of have to educate customers on, make sure that they understand that particularly with the grass-fed, there might be those differences, and that's normal, and that's something to almost look forward to. And then there's kind of a land issue. We don't have the wide open spaces that they have in the West, so finding farmers who have the capacity to build bigger farms is challenging as we grow. And we are looking a lot to New York State, both the Hudson River Valley, where we've historically worked, and also a little bit further west.
Interesting. Well, Sophie, on that note, when we're thinking about kind of things from the consumer end, like, what are there like trends and challenges you see for what folks are coming in, like, asking for and wanting, and like, what are the kind of challenges in education that you're seeing at the counter level from a marketing perspective?
Sure, yeah. I mean, definitely on seasonality, I think that you know, on grilling season, we see an uptick on great grilling cuts and then have to figure out what to do with those really lush braising cuts and vice versa, you know, trying to get people excited about lamb shanks. I mean, that in itself is a fun challenge that we take head on. And I think encouraging by giving advice, giving tips, you know, it touches back on the relationship with the butcher, but, you know, really, really giving an opportunity to introduce and talk about cuts that maybe don't fit the season, but showing new and exciting ways to use them. I think also, you know, people are trying to be even more educated out there today, and they listen to radio programs, and they stay up on, you know, food experts that are writing a lot out there, and there's so much information, and I think a lot comes in about certified organic specifically, and that's a question we get over the phone and in the shop a lot is about certified organic pork. And, you know, our pork is raised on the most beautiful farm upstate, and it's actually a certified organic hay farm. And they're leading happy lives, running in the woods, eating wild apples and tubers, and just, you know, living the life a pig should live. But it's not certified organic. So explaining why that might be cost prohibitive for small farmers, explaining why, you know, yes, they could have that certification, but maybe that doesn't speak towards the quality of life in the big picture. So really just touching on that with customers, encouraging them to try it, understanding the point that they're coming from and their intention for asking and how good that is, and, you know, how the organic movement has become such a huge part of the food industry now. And it is proving to be in a lot of ways a viable business model. And so, you know, encouraging them to keep going with that and, like, yeah, keep pushing for organic, but understand that in this transition period, especially in the meat industry, that might not always be a possibility, at least in our shop at this time. It's something that is always in conversation. And so, you know, keep asking for it, but be receptive to the response and understand that there are challenges to that alone, but how we can all work together to get to that next stage.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was reading an article this morning about, you know, just because your chicken is organic doesn't mean it was raised under humane conditions.
Right.
And, you know, I really had to, like, take a minute to think about the value of the article. Because on one hand, I think it's obviously, like, I'm always erring on the side of increasing transparency and giving people more information. But I also feel like, God damn, you know, if I can't trust organic, then what can I trust? And it gets overwhelming, like, super quickly. And, sure. And what is the role of the media in kind of presenting information in a way that is helpful, not overwhelming and confusing? And I think you hit it, you know, talking about, like, supporting the transition process, mm-hmm. and, like, the fact that this is a dynamic space, I think really resonates with me, because, like, I want people to be able to understand the difference, but I also don't want to lose value of the organic. Like, there's real value to that label. And I feel like a lot of times in press, there's, like, a sensationalism behind that parsing where they're like, organic's not what you think it is.
Right.
Like, organic is bad because it includes these things. And I'm always like, Jesus, no, take it easy.
Right.
Like,
everybody calm down.
Calm down. Take a few steps back. Take a few steps back. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Sam, can you speak to that? The organic sourcing, when you are asking farmers or looking for where is the bottleneck there? And is it different for beef or for chicken or for pigs?
With meat, the challenge is that it's another step in the supply chain that has to be organic. So it's with vegetables, if you're raising them, you know, there's a process for the land. The land can't have had any pesticides or anything on it for, I believe it's 3 years, but I believe it's 3 years. After which, then you can plant, you know, then your seeds are eligible, and then you can't use anything on them in that year, obviously, and you can't use any chemicals processing them and all that. So if you're raising animals, not only does your land have to be that way and anything you're growing on that land, but then anything you bring in from outside also has to be certified organic. So there's a lot of different things that need to be certified organic. And then there's the costs, which at this point in time, it is incredibly more expensive to buy organic grains than it is to buy by conventional grains. And, you know, even if it's not a lot, it still makes a big difference on the price per pound that a farmer needs to charge, and that ends up being reflected in the price to the consumer. I think in an ideal world, we would love for all of our farmers to be certified organic. And as we develop this co-op, that's something that we hope to be able to provide as kind of extension services, where we might eventually be able to help them do the paperwork, fill out all the forms required, get the inspectors out there, and make that happen.
Yeah. I think for me, too, the thing that I always like remind people is that, you know, cows are ruminants. So their like dietary needs are very different from pigs. Pigs are omnivores. You know, they definitely, like, there's no grass-fed pigs out there.
Correct.
It's not a thing you're seeing.
That is something we point out many times a week.
And then, you know, similarly for chicken. So it's also, I think, often in the meat conversation, what happens really quickly is you have to confront these, like, biological realities, which people get on a very, like, intimate level where, like, oh, I understand, like, what happens in, like, my body when I'm, like, eating different things, or when, you know, women have children that then, you know, milk comes. And it's like the same for animals. And yet, because I think we're so removed from thinking of like meat as a living, breathing creature, that all that kind of really basic biology 101 stuff that we know really goes out the window. And then when someone says it back to you, you're almost like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have that conversation a lot about veal, because we actually don't carry veal as a company, and people are devastated that they can't get ossobuco through us. But when I tell them that, well, you know, the babies have to, the mother has to get pregnant and have a baby, and then we take, you know, when we have bought them in the past, it's been from dairy operations because they have to get the animals pregnant for them to make milk for cheese. And just that idea that you can't have cheese without first having a baby,
yeah,
is mind-blowing. And then the baby gets killed for meat, which is not necessarily a problem, but understanding that full life cycle and being okay with it, I think, is part of being a conscious consumer. You understand what the process is, and you decide, you make the decision for yourself whether you are okay with that and you want to eat that end product.
Yeah, based on all those criteria. Well, we're going to take a quick station break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the Slow Meat Conference coming up this June. So hang tight. We'll be right back.
Listening to Knife Show. This is the Farm Report on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
And we are back, continuing our conversation on meat and the slow meat movement. We are in studio with two of the fine women of Fleischer's. And I wanted to talk with you, Sam, about the upcoming Slow Food. Their Slow Meat Conference is happening again this year in Denver, June 4th through the 6th. And you went last year as one of their inaugural delegates. So give us a sense of how was it? What happened? What did you think? What were your kind of takeaways?
The first Slow Meat Conference was great. It was a pretty unique opportunity to connect with people across the country. There were 100 delegates from all different states. They did a really nice job of spreading that out. And I think so often we get stuck in our own little local communities, especially because of the local movement, that we forget that there are other people doing the same thing in different parts of the country. And then also up and down the supply chain. So from the producers to the processors to the butchers and the people working on the consumer end, there were people spanning all different areas.
Awesome. So any like kind of aha moments for you?
The conference was really focused around brainstorming areas for us to work on collectively. And I think, you know, there it was less about, you know, any one person standing up and say, I know the correct way of doing this, than all of us connecting and identifying what the problems are so that this year we can talk about what we're going to do to actually you know, solve those problems and what we can do in our local communities to make sure that we're all moving forward together rather than separately working on little bits that maybe someone else is also doing in another area, but not in any kind of real organized way. So I think that the aha moment was realizing, oh, we're all working on the same problem. Why don't we just do this together?
Yeah, I think that to me that always is like my kind of favorite thing about getting together with like a group of other like executive directors or radio people, where I'm like, oh, I thought this was just my thing, but you're struggling with that too. It makes me feel so much better.
Exactly.
How do you deal with it? What should we do? So what are you excited, you know, about coming into the conference for this year? I mean, are there things that you've been reflecting on or people you're looking forward to see, or like what's getting you like motivated for the June time?
Well, our company is a very different company this year. As we mentioned earlier, we've grown a lot. And with that, we've taken on a lot of new challenges. Our space in Red Hook, where we do a lot of the breaking down of whole animals, we only get in whole animals. And that space is we're converting to a USDA processing facility, which is really exciting for us. It allows us to do more wholesale business. It allows us to offer cut and wraps for local farmers, which we're excited about. And in general, it just gives us a greater ability to provide, whether it's raw meat or prepared foods or other packaged products. But that puts us into a whole new space and a whole new set of problems. So I'm excited both to bring what we've learned to the table and share that, and also to understand from people who have already done this what we have to look forward to.
Sure. Anyone, you know, I know that there was a big effort made last year to include people along the spectrum of the supply chain. So small producers, large producers, grass-fed, grain-fed, different, you know, types of livestock. Are there gaps, you know, in what you saw represented at the summit that you're hoping will be addressed this year?
I think pretty consistently people mentioned the challenges of processing and infrastructure, and it was pretty much across the board that people said that those were issues. So I'm really hoping we can dig deeper into those, and we are seeing a lot of benefits of kind of collaboration in our co-op, and I know that other people are seeing that as well. And but collaboration, a bunch of farmers working together, still doesn't solve the problem of how are we going to truck the animals to the slaughterhouse, or what happens if the slaughterhouse is 4 hours away or something like that. So I think those problems are the ones that we need to focus on.
Yeah, that were like a little sticky. Well, Sophie, kind of thinking about this idea of building a robust community, you know, obviously you have your team at the shop there and folks who can answer questions. But in your position, I mean, who are the folks that you're looking to kind of add to your information and giving you like the tools you need to share with your customers?
You mean people already in the industry? Or?
Yeah, or like, I mean, are there resources that you look to? Is there like a meat digest where like all the hot meat news is here? Or, you know, kind of other things that you use to kind of stay up on kind of what people are talking to and be able to respond to, you know, the stuff that people have coming in your direction?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I always try and stay up on blogs like Civil Eats that really are touching on some of the biggest issues that the food industry is facing right now. And I find that to be a great way to then share that information to our customers and our network, because, you know, we're experts in meat and cutting meat and, of course, sourcing. But there are so many other issues that are maybe, you know, directly involved in what we do every day, or maybe a little bit more tangential, that I think still is good to incorporate in what we share. So, you know, and also we all kind of like share books around the company too, and staying up on, you know, we all recently read like Nicolette Nyman's book and Defending Beef, and just kind of hearing how people are talking about it, whether, you know, arguments are made more in a scientific, you know, study-based argument or something that's more experiential, and how people are, you know, what their experience farming is or what their experience at the slaughterhouse. So really being able to use other resources that are out there and share that. And definitely then as we bring people into the shop and getting them caught up to even where we are, but also, you know, learning about their experience, it, I think, definitely is a great forum. I'd love to see more places where people can meet and talk about that, whether that be online or in person. But, you know, I think really looking at health as a central issue to all of this, because I think that's where a lot of motivation for doing the right thing comes from. Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. Sam, I'm wondering, you know, we're just about out of time, but I always love to ask the magic wand question. Is there a problem on your plate right now where you're like, if I had my magic wand, then I could kind of just figure this out? Is there something that jumps to the front of your mind, either, you know, big or small?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I mean, what we're trying to do on just a day-to-day basis or big picture basis is connect the most number of people with an alternative to the industrial supply chain. And I think I wish I could make it as easy, as convenient, and as accessible, you know, both in every way. And like, I wish there were Fleischers in every neighborhood. And I wish that the price point was, you know, exactly the same or lower than conventional beef and all that. I think it's really about accessibility, because without the high quality being available to everyone, I think it you know, we're not quite there yet.
Still working.
Mm-hmm. So the accessibility thing, I would just make it, you know, it's free for everyone, something like that. I don't know.
Well, I think that's coming from a very good place of like wanting everyone to be able to have access to meat that they can feel good about. It's good for their families and good for the environment, which is a lot more of what you're going to hear at the Slow Food USA Slow Meat Conference. Again, that's coming up this June, 4th through 6th in Denver. You can learn more by visiting www.slowfoodusa.org. You can find out more about Fleischer's, obviously, by visiting their stores or follow them on Twitter. It's at Fleischer's. But any kind of learning opportunities, anything coming up that folks should have on their radar?
Yeah, absolutely. We have several Butchery 101 classes coming up, which are some short form ways for people of all skill levels to join in. We're doing a slaughter class on May 17th, where we actually go to a small farm in the Hudson Valley and are present for a pig slaughter. Very educational. And, you know, especially for people who are looking to butchery as a profession, Fleischer's has probably the best program in the country, if not the world, on learning how to butcher. And you come on board for 3 months, you join us in Red Hook, you are cutting all day, every day, with this sustainable local food system focus. And it's amazing, the applicants and the inquiries that we get from Istanbul to Kenya to Colombia to Brooklyn. I mean, there's a lot of interest, and it's really exciting for us to share our mission and our skills. So definitely encourage people to apply and ask more questions to the website. Keep those coming.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, Sophie, Sam, thank you so much for joining us. It's been really great chatting with you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, that is a wrap, folks. You've made it to the end of another episode of The Farm Report. Stay with us. We'll be back next week with more talk on the food and farming industry. You can find our show, like all 39 of our weekly programs, on the Heritage Radio Network through iTunes or Stitcher. If you like us, please subscribe. And if you're feeling very generous, leave a comment. That definitely helps people find us and learn more about the show. Visit our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. We are in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign. I hope you'll kick in a couple of bucks to help us bring you a better website. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned in. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.